Chapter 65. The Town Ho Story. As told at the Golden Inn, the Cape of Good Hope, and all the watery region round about there, is much like some noted four corners of a great highway, where you meet more travelers than in any other part. It was not very long, after speaking the Goni, that another homeward bound wheelman, the Town Ho, was encountered. She was manned almost wholly by Polynesians. In the short gam that ensued, she gave us strong news of Moby Dick. To some, the general interest in the white whale was now wildly heightened by a circumstance of the Town Ho's story, which seemed obscurely to involve with the whale a certain wondrous, inverted visitation of one of those so-called judgments of God which at times are said to overtake some men. This latter circumstance, with its own particular accompaniments, forming what may be called the secret part of the tragedy about to be narrated, never reached the ears of Captain Ahab or his mates. For that secret part of the story was unknown to the captain of the Town Ho himself. It was the private property of three Confederate white seamen of that ship, one of whom, it seems, communicated it to Tishtigo with Romish injunctions of secrecy, but the following night Tishtigo rambled in his sleep, and revealed so much of it in that way, that when he was wakened he could not well withhold the rest. Nevertheless, so potent an influence did this thing have on those seamen in the Pequod who came to the full knowledge of it, and by such a strange delicacy, to call it so, were they governed in this matter, that they kept the secret among themselves, so that it never transpired abaft the Pequod's main mast. Interweaving in its proper place this darker thread with the story as publicly narrated on the ship, the whole of this strange affair I now proceed to put on lasting record. The ancient whale cry upon first sighting a whale from the masthead, still used by whalemen in hunting the famous Galapagos terrapin. For my humor's sake, I shall preserve the style in which I once narrated it at Lima, to a lounging circle of my Spanish friends, one Saint's Eve, smoking upon the thick gilt-tiled piazza of the Golden Inn. Of those fine cavaliers, the young dons, Pedro and Sebastian, were on the closer terms with me, and hence the interluding questions they occasionally put, and which are duly answered at the time. Some 2 years prior to my first learning the events which I am about rehearsing to you, gentlemen, the Town Ho, sperm whaler of Nantucket, was cruising in your Pacific here, not very many days sail eastward from the eaves of this good Golden Inn. She was somewhere to the northward of the line. One morning upon handling the pumps, according to daily usage, it was observed that she made more water in her hold than common. They supposed a swordfish had stabbed her, gentlemen. But the captain, having some unusual reason for believing that rare good luck awaited him in those latitudes, and therefore being very averse to quit them, and the leak not being then considered at all dangerous, though, indeed, they could not find it, after searching the hold as low down as was possible in rather heavy weather, the ship still continued her cruisings, the mariners working at the pumps at wide and easy intervals. But no good luck came. More days went by, and not only was the leak yet undiscovered, but it sensibly increased. So much so, that now taking some alarm, the captain, making all sail, stood away for the nearest harbor among the islands, there to have his hull hove out and repaired. Though no small passage was before her, yet, if the commonest chance favored, he did not at all fear that his ship would founder by the way, because his pumps were of the best, and being periodically relieved at them, those 36 men of his could easily keep the ship free. Never mind if the leak should double on her. In truth, well nigh the whole of this passage, being attended by very prosperous breezes, the Town Ho had all but certainly arrived in perfect safety at her port without the occurrence of the least fatality, had it not been for the brutal overbearing of Radney, the mate, a vineyarder, and the bitterly provoked vengeance of Steelcolt, a lakeman and desperado from Buffalo. Lakeman. Buffalo. Pray, what is a lakeman, and where is Buffalo? Apostrophe said Don Sebastian, rising in his swinging mat of grass. on the eastern shore of our Lake Erie, Don. But I crave your courtesy, maybe you shall soon hear further of all that. Now, gentlemen, in square sail bricks and three-masted ships, well nigh as large and stout as any that ever sailed out of your old Callao to far Manila, this lakeman, in the landlocked heart of our America, had yet been nurtured by all those agrarian freebooting impressions popularly connected with the open ocean. For in their interflowing aggregate, those grand freshwater seas of ours, Erie, and Ontario, and Huron, and Superior, and Michigan, possess an ocean-like expansiveness, with many of the ocean's noblest traits, with many of its rim varieties of races and of climes. They contain round archipelagos of romantic isles, even as the Polynesian waters do. In large part, are shored by two great contrasting nations, as the Atlantic is. They furnish long maritime approaches to our numerous territorial colonies from the east, dotted all round their banks. Here and there are frowned upon by batteries, and by the goat-like craggy guns of lofty Mackinac. They have heard the fleet thunderings of naval victories. At intervals, they yield their beaches to wild barbarians, whose red-painted faces flash from out their peltry wigwams. For leagues and leagues are flanked by ancient and unentered forests, where the gaunt pines stand like serried lines of kings in Gothic genealogies. Those same woods harboring wild Afric beasts of prey, and silken creatures whose exported furs give robes to Tartar emperors. They mirror the paved capitals of Buffalo and Cleveland, as well as Winnebago villages. They float alike the full-rigged merchant ship, the armed cruiser of the state, the steamer, and the beach canoe. They are swept by Borean and Dismasting blasts as direful as any that lash the salted wave. They know what shipwrecks are, for out of sight of land, however inland, they have drowned full many a midnight ship with all its shrieking crew. Thus, gentlemen, though an inlander, Steelkilt was wild ocean-born, and wild ocean-nurtured. As much of an audacious mariner as any. And for Radney, though in his infancy he may have laid him down on the lone Nantucket beach, to nurse at his maternal sea, though in after life he had long followed our austere Atlantic and near contemplative Pacific, yet was he quite as vengeful, and full of social quarrel as the backwoods seaman, fresh from the latitudes of buckhorn-handled bowie knives. Yet was this Nantucketer a man with some good-hearted traits, and this lakeman, a mariner, who though a sort of devil indeed, might yet by inflexible firmness, only tempered by that common decency of human recognition which is the meanest slave's right, thus treated, this Steelkilt had long been retained harmless and docile. At all events, he had proved so thus far, but Radney was doomed and made mad, and Steelkilt but, gentlemen, you shall hear. It was not more than a day or two at the furthest, after pointing her prow for her island haven, that the town hose leak seemed again increasing, but only so as to require an hour more at the pumps every day. You must know that in a settled and civilized ocean like our Atlantic, for example, some skippers think little of pumping their whole way across it. Though of a still, sleepy night, should the officer of the deck happen to forget his duty in that respect, the probability would be that he and his shipmates would never again remember it, on account of all hands gently subsiding to the bottom. Nor in the solitary and savage seas far from you to the westward, gentlemen, is it altogether unusual for ships to keep clanging at their pump handles in full chorus even for a voyage of considerable length, that is, if it lie along a tolerably accessible coast, or if any other reasonable retreat is afforded them. It is only when a leaky vessel is in some very out-of-the-way part of those waters, some really landless latitude, that her captain begins to feel a little anxious. Much this way had it been with the town ho. So when her leak was found gaining once more, there was in truth some small concern manifested by several of her company, especially by Radney the mate. He commanded the upper sails to be well hoisted, sheeted home anew, and every way expanded to the breeze. Now this Radney, I suppose, was as little of a coward, and as little inclined to any sort of nervous apprehensiveness touching his own person as any fearless unthinking creature on land, or on sea, that you can conveniently imagine, gentlemen. Therefore when he betrayed this solicitude about the safety of the ship, some of the seamen declared that it was only on account of his being a part owner in her. So when they were working, that evening at the pumps, there was on this head no small gamesomeness slyly going on among them, as they stood with their feet continually overflowed by the rippling clear water, clear as any mountain spring, gentlemen, that bubbling from the pumps, ran across the deck, and poured itself out in steady spouts at the lee scupper holes. Now, as you well know, it is not seldom the case in this conventional world of ours, watery or otherwise, that when a person placed in command over his fellow men finds one of them to be very significantly his superior in general pride of manhood, straightway against that man he conceives an unconquerable dislike and bitterness. And if he have a chance he will pull down, and pulverize that subaltern's tower, and make a little heap of dust of it. Be this conceit of mine as it may, gentlemen, at all events Steelkilt was a tall and noble animal with a head like a Roman, and a flowing golden beard like the tasseled housings of your last viceroy's snorting charger, and a brain, and a heart, and a soul in him, gentlemen, which had made Steelkilt Charlemagne, had he been born son to Charlemagne's father. But Radney, the mate, was ugly as a mule, yet as hardy, as stubborn, as malicious. He did not love Steelkilt, and Steelkilt knew it. Espying the mate drawing near as he was toiling at the pump with the rest, the lakeman affected not to notice him, but a nod, went on with his gay banterings. Aye, my merry lads, it's a lively leak this. Hold a canakin, one of ye, and let's have a taste. By the Lord, it's worth bottling. I tell ye what, men, old Rat's investment must go for it. He had best cut away his part of the hull, and tow it home. The fact is, boys, that swordfish only began the job. He's come back again with a gang of ship carpenters, sawfish, and filefish, and whatnot, and the whole posse of them are now hard at work cutting and slashing at the bottom, making improvements, I suppose. If old Rad were here now, I'd tell him to jump overboard and scatter him. They're playing the devil with his estate, I can tell him. But he's a simple old soul, Rad, and a beauty too. Boys, they say the rest of his property is invested in looking glasses. I wonder if he'd give a poor devil like me the model of his nose. Damn your eyes. What's that pump stopping for? Roared Radney, pretending not to have heard the sailor's talk. Thunder away at it. Aye, sir, said Steelkilt, merry as a cricket. Lively, boys, lively now. And with that the pump clanged like 50 fire engines. The men tossed their hats off to it, and ere long that peculiar gasping of the lungs was heard which denotes the fullest tension of life's utmost energies. Quitting the pump at last, with the rest of his band, the lakeman went forward all panting, and sat himself down on the windlass, his face fiery red, his eyes bloodshot, and wiping the profuse sweat from his brow. Now what cozening fiend it was, gentlemen, that possessed Radney to meddle with such a man in that corporeally exasperated state, I know not, but so it happened. Intolerably striding along the deck, the mate commanded him to get a broom and sweep down the planks, and also a shovel, and remove some offensive matters consequent upon allowing a pig to run at large. Now, gentlemen, sweeping a ship's deck at sea is a piece of household work which in all times but raging gales is regularly attended to every evening. It has been known to be done in the case of ships actually foundering at the time. Such, gentlemen, is the inflexibility of sea usages, and the instinctive love of neatness in seamen, some of whom would not willingly drown without first washing their faces. But in all vessels this broom business is the prescriptive province of the boys, if boys there be aboard. Besides, it was the stronger men in the town O that had been divided in two gangs, taking turns at the pumps, and being the most athletic seaman of them all, Steelcolt had been regularly assigned captain of one of the gangs. Consequently he should have been freed from any trivial business not connected with truly nautical duties, such being the case with his comrades. I mention all these particulars, so that you may understand exactly how this affair stood between the two men. But there was more than this. The order about the shovel was almost as plainly meant to sting and insult Steelcolt, as though Radney had spat in his face. Any man who has gone sailor in a whale ship will understand this, and all this and doubtless much more, the lakeman fully comprehended, when the mate uttered his command. But as he sat still for a moment, and as he steadfastly looked into the mate's malignant eye, and perceived the stacks of powder casks heaped up in him, and the slow match silently burning along towards them, as he instinctively saw all this, that strange forbearance and unwillingness to stir up the deeper passionateness in any already ireful being a repugnance most felt, when felt at all, by really valiant men, even when aggrieved, this nameless phantom feeling, gentlemen, stole over Steelcolt. Therefore, in his ordinary tone, only a little broken by the bodily exhaustion he was temporarily in, he answered him saying that sweeping the deck was not his business, and he would not do it. And then, without at all alluding to the shovel, he pointed to three lads as the customary sweepers, who, not being billeted at the pumps, had done little or nothing all day. To this, Radney replied with an oath, in a most domineering and outrageous manner unconditionally reiterating his command, meanwhile advancing upon the still-seated lakeman, with an uplifted cooper's club hammer which he had snatched from a cask nearby. Heated and irritated as he was by his spasmodic toil at the pumps, for all his first nameless feeling of forbearance the sweating Steelcolt could but ill brook this bearing in the mate, but somehow still smothering the conflagration within him, without speaking he remained doggedly rooted to his seat, till at last the incensed Radney shook the hammer within a few inches of his face, furiously commanding him to do his bidding. Steelcolt rose, and slowly retreating round the windlass, steadily followed by the mate with his menacing hammer, deliberately repeated his intention not to obey. Seeing, however, that his forbearance had not the slightest effect, by an awful and unspeakable intimation with his twisted hand he warned off the foolish and infatuated man. But it was to no purpose. And in this way the two went once slowly round the windlass, when, resolved at last, no longer to retreat, bethinking him that he had now forborne as much as comported with his humor, the lakeman paused on the hatches, and thus spoke to the officer. " Mr. Radney, I will not obey you. Take that hammer away, or look to yourself. But the predestinated mate coming still closer to him, where the lakeman stood fixed, now shook the heavy hammer within an inch of his teeth, meanwhile repeating a string of insufferable maledictions, retreating not the thousandth part of an inch, stabbing him in the eye with the unflinching poniard of his glance, Steelcolt, clenching his right hand behind him, and creepingly drawing it back, told his persecutor that if the hammer but grazed his cheek he, Steelcolt, would murder him. But, gentlemen, the fool had been branded for the slaughter by the gods. Immediately the hammer touched the cheek, the next instant the lower jaw of the mate was stove in his head. He fell on the hatch spouting blood like a whale. Ere the cry could go aft, Steelcolt was shaking one of the backstays leading far aloft to where two of his comrades were standing their mastheads. They were both cannelers. Cried Don Pedro. We have seen many whale ships in our harbors, but never heard of your cannelers. Pardon. Who and what are they? Cannelers, Don, are the boatmen belonging to our Grand Erie Canal. You must have heard of it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.